Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. That is my radio show, and as you might expect, my name is Michael Cutler. For those of you who perhaps are listening for the first time, I welcome you. If you're not familiar with me, I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the INS. My career spanned some 30 years. I began working for that agency way back in October 1971. Hard to believe so much time has elapsed. Hard to believe that so much change has come to our country. Hard to believe we are where we are today. If you want to find out more about me, there's a couple of excellent websites I would love for you to visit. First of all, I have my own personal website. That website is Michael Cutler, one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I am also, and have been for some time, a senior fellow with a terrific organization. The organization's name is CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their terrific website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. Do a lot of writing for them. Occasionally I head to the West Coast. They are headquartered in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, an area that has a phenomenal climate, great food, wonderful people. Last time I was there, I truly had a memorable time. Although I'm a New Yorker, it's easy to work with folks all across the country through the miracle of cell phones, the internet, and the occasional airplane trip. So I also write for capsweb.org. And finally, my newest venture, and one that I'm extremely proud of, is a website called talkborder.com. That's one word, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R, talkborder.com. It is on And Magazine, and I provide interviews, not only oral, as we do here, but also videos. We just posted my latest interview with a gentleman by the name of Thomas Machete. Real tragedy there, and we'll get a little bit more into Tom Machete, but his brother, New York City police officer Robert Machete, was killed by an alien who had been previously deported after he was convicted of drug offenses, arrested by the NYPD on several occasions, each time released out onto the street, where ultimately on March 3rd, 1989, he was encountered by 24-year-old police officer Robert E. Machete of the NYPD's Brooklyn South Task Force. What followed was the death of that young cop. His wife was pregnant with a daughter I had bumped into inadvertently, but that who he would never get to see, never get to hold, and she would never get to know her dad. Unbelievable tragedy. I wound up testifying at that murder trial. So we'll get a little bit more into that. But the focus, as you might imagine, for most of my programs is the multitude of failures of our government to secure our borders and really enforce immigration laws that not only protect our country and our citizens, which are, of course, the two primary objectives of our immigration laws, but honor the countless millions of lawful immigrants who, since the founding of this great nation, entered our country legally, abided by our laws and our regulations, and helped build this country to where it is today. Of course, it seems as though there's a fire sale ongoing and that we have politicians from both sides of the aisle eager to sell off property that's not theirs. You know, in law enforcement, when you sell stolen property, you are said to be fencing that property. So while they may be fencing our country, they don't want to build a fence to protect our country. Interesting contrast, isn't it? So anyway, talkborder.com is a new undertaking. I have, I guess we have about 10 videos or close to 10 videos of interviews that I have done and discussions that I've had with my audience. And part of the impetus for doing TalkBorder.com, quite frankly, is that while in the past I've probably done about 300 television interviews about the immigration issue and all of its many facets, I've also testified before 15 congressional hearings and have worked with a number of state legislatures, including the state of Arizona. I have worked with a law firm retained by Governor Jan Brewer of that beleaguered state, beleaguered not only by the criminals who run the border and then commit crime in Arizona, as we're basically seeing across the country these days, by the way, but beleaguered because they came to be sued by the federal government for daring to promulgate immigration laws that, in essence, parallel our federal immigration laws that the federal government is determined to not enforce. So I worked with Arizona and Indiana and Alabama and Texas, and the list goes on. But bottom line, this is my focus, and it is my goal to provide perspectives and information that you're not going to get anywhere else. In the past, as I say, I have done 300 television programs, give or take a couple. But lately, I am fortunate if I'm able to do an interview on TV every 3 or 4 months. Most recently, I did a few interviews for Neil Cavuto. Seems to be just about the only person these days who's willing to have that conversation. So TalkBorder.com provides me with a place where I can post my articles, and I do, and where I can post my interviews, videos that run roughly 24, 25 minutes. And these are interviews that should be on the networks but are not. And, you know, if you look at the networks these days and you look at what passes for news broadcasts, I am sure that Walter Cronkite is pinwheeling in his grave along with Edward R. Murrow, Eric Severide, and a host of true broadcast journalist pioneers. I do know that I can tell you that I had the absolute privilege of having about a half dozen telephone conversations with Mike Wallace, another old school journalist who was very supportive of what I have been trying to do. But the media today won't do it. And people scream about the liberal media. And, you know, we've got to dispel that myth, folks. You know, the politicians are very, very wise. They understand this idea of divide and conquer. So we have been divided up of liberal versus conservative, and it's the liberal media that really won't tell us the truth about immigration. It's not the liberal media, folks. It's corporate media. I wrote an article, and I would urge you to go there, to The Social Contract. It is a quarterly magazine. It's available online, and it's available in newsstands. And this is, I guess, my fourth or fifth lengthy article that I've written for that publication. And this time, the entire issue focused on the people that are getting wealthy off of illegal immigration and legal immigration as well, the visa process and so forth, how that whole system has become corrupted. And I entitled my article, which runs a little over 20 pages, I called it Immigration, the Modern Day Gold Rush. So when you stop and understand how many people are literally and figuratively making out like bandits, it's easy to understand what the story is. I see that I have a caller. Let's see who's calling in. Here we go. Hi, you're talking to Mike Cutler. Who's calling?
Hi, Mike. This is Bert Kiefer from AmericaWorking.org.
Bert, thank you so much for calling. How are you today?
I am fantastic, and thank you for having me.
Well, glad to have you join me. I know you sent me an email. I'm glad to see that you called in today. Why don't we spend the next 10 minutes or so talking about, I know that you have a film that's out.
I have 9 videos,
okay.
The threats to our nation, and one of them is Securing America's Borders.
Mm-hmm. And your background is what?
I'm actually a general contractor that about 3 years ago, naturally, you know, losing everything we worked for, I started doing town meetings and speaking, and I just started to put them in video form and take it to the Internet.
Where do you live? Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Escondido, California.
Okay. So, in fact, we were just talking, if you were listening to the program, you know, I do a lot of work with CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. It's funny, you know, I was an agent for 30 years, but my dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He died when I was 19 years old. And doesn't it infuriate you when you hear politicians talk about the work Americans won't do and you realize how many hardworking blue-collar Americans are out there busting their tail each and every day, whether it's on construction sites, whether it's in steel foundries, whether it's in coal mines, doing back-breaking, filthy, dangerous work, and yet we have this condescension from politicians who purportedly were elected to represent us.
Yeah, and part of it, when they claim that our unemployment rate is 8.1% is completely false.
Yep.
We've never seen unemployment at 8.1 that, you know, brought a country to its knees. I truly feel we're closer to 17% to 20%
yeah,
as far
as
the construction part.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, the real measure here also is the fact that now more Americans than ever, percentage-wise, than ever in the history of this country are living below the poverty line.
That's correct. And what you know, what all their studies don't show is how many of us had to drop our wage that we get paid and how many of us aren't working 40 hours a week. We might work 1 or 2 days a week and we're not completely unemployed, but our income is cut in half.
Underemployed. You're drastically underemployed.
Yes.
And you know what's so remarkable? And I know that labor unions are getting beat up on now. My dad belonged to the plumbers union here in New York City. Certain unions, I think, are good and worthwhile. Others, we could have this bad discussion. But the idea to the unions, at least when the AFL-CIO was formed, was to level the playing field. You know, the guy that starts a company should have every expectation of being successful for putting in his money and his blood, sweat, and tears into that company. But the people who work for him should have an opportunity to support their families in a decent way also. And that's what the idea to the unions was, to create a level playing field. So I'd love to know, from your perspective, how could it be liberal to want to flood the labor market with millions of foreign workers, and that number of 11 million is another joke, it's probably closer to 30 or 35 million. So we flood the labor market with lots of folks who are willing to work for substandard wages under dangerously illegal conditions, and this is a liberal goal? Isn't this crazy to think that this is anything but an anti-worker goal also?
Well, I agree with you, and it's also slave labor to bring in those that will be working for less dollar, and that's also cutting the Americanism out.
Yep.
Yes.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, it's so remarkable that so many people, if you feed them a slogan, will buy it over time. That was what the Nazis did, you know. Repeat the big lie often enough, and sooner or later people start to think that the big lie is the truth. Look at the commercials for cigarettes. Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. How many people started to believe that nonsense and wound up with emphysema, lung cancer, or heart disease? Winston
Absolutely.
Tastes good like
I
a cigarette should.
I agree with you 100% on that. And also, when they bring in the slave labor, in order for them to get their paycheck, they know they control them. And as far as Americans that are educated and healthy, we're not controllable. So they have that vote for their side.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you look at where Mexico is right now, rather than having Mexico look to America as its role model, today our government is looking to Mexico as its role model, where you have an oligarchy where perhaps 2% of the population controls 95% of the wealth. The greedy SOBs across America look at that and say, wow, if we could get rid of the middle class, we could pocket the money that we get from them.
You're absolutely right. And for us to realize that when we look at Mexico, that's what we will become if we do not take this country back and secure our borders.
Yep, that is absolutely the destination for this ship, the United States.
Well, you know, part of it, too, is legal immigration is part of what has made this country great.
Yes.
But
absolutely.
The problem is when you have the illegals come in and, you know, it's costing us over $340 billion a year for the welfare program for these people. But the other problem is that they bring their own flag with them, and then they raise their flag above ours in the land that our forefathers conquered. And now we celebrate their Cinco de Mayo Day. And where's it going to stop? With the anchor babies, I try to tell people that there's many threats of the illegals, but the greatest one that is so overlooked is the power in voting. And these illegals that come over and drop 3 or 4 kids are anchor babies, and those kids are coming to age of vote in 2015 to 2016, and their vote will offset the conservative vote. So we lost our country in the voting process. That's huge.
Well, you know, and again, but let's be clear. This has nothing to do with being pro-conservative or pro-liberal. I consider myself a liberal, by the way. I'm registered as a Democrat. I can't tell you the last time I voted for a Democrat for national office. But the problem that we're having, really and truly, and by the way, let's be also clear on something else. This is not just about Mexico. As an immigration agent, I spent 26 years out on the street as an agent. For 4 years, I was an inspector assigned to Kennedy Airport, but the balance of my career from 1975 on, I was a special agent, and half of my time I was with the Drug Task Force and working on narcotics and international terrorism. And so understand that illegal immigration isn't purely about people who are here, not only from Mexico, but from Latin America, but from the four corners of the planet. I spent years, Bert, where I didn't arrest a single Spanish-speaking alien. I've arrested aliens from every country you could imagine, from England and from Canada, from Japan and from Jamaica, from China. So it's making a distinction between people who are citizens of the United States versus people who are not. That's why the word alien is so repugnant to the open borders crowd, what I call the immigration anarchists, because they understand that if you provide clarity to the debate, they cannot win. So what they do is, it started with Jimmy Carter, who said that immigration employees could no longer refer to aliens as being aliens. And legally, the term alien simply means any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. Every other country on the planet has a comparable word. Mexico uses the term extranjero, which translates to foreigner or alien. Every country makes a distinction between their own citizens and the citizens of the other countries of the world. And no one sees an insult in it. The problem with the word alien is clarity. Because if you look at the laws, if you look at the facts, if you look at common sense, if you look at morality and decency, it is reasonable, logical, and appropriate for every country to secure its borders and enforce its immigration laws. So the other side that wants to take down the borders, wants to ignore the immigration laws because they're gaining tons of money, megabucks, only have one strategy that they can use. It's intimidation by name-calling, and it's use of deceptive language. I don't change the terminology, they do. And when I went after this issue about them using the word undocumented, one of the things I said, Bert, is that in an era of this war on terror, and as a New Yorker, I got to tell you, the ashes from 9/11 landed on my home. I got to tell you, my neighbors were out the night of 9/11 wandering the streets crying hysterically because they didn't know where their wives or their husbands or their children or their parents were. So I saw it up close and in person. The ashes landed on us here in Brooklyn. And so, you know, when you look at the way that we are now waging a war on terror, wherever you go, you have to show identity documents. You can't get on an airplane. You can't get into a government building or a corporate headquarters without showing ID. So to say someone's undocumented means they are a threat. And I made that point when I have debated the ACLU. I have made that point when I've been on college campuses across this country. I have made that point when I've testified at criminal trials in various federal districts. So the other side said, oh, gosh, we better not use the word undocumented anymore, because they realized that it exposed a vulnerability. Suddenly this became a problem. You know what the new word is? They now use the word unauthorized.
Wow.
So understand what's happening. They
yeah.
are changing the language continually because they're being caught up in their own web of lies and BS. Isn't that remarkable?
It's remarkable, but two things I'd like to comment
sure,
on.
Go right ahead, Bert.
One thing is, it's our constitutional right and duty to protect our land from all dangers, foreign or domestic.
Absolutely.
And not securing the borders is one of them. And the illegal aliens aren't all Hispanic. We call them OTMs, other than Mexicans. And a lot of them are Middle Eastern terrorists who migrate to Europe. Then they go to South America to the tri-border region where they learn to speak Spanish. And then they go to Mexico and blend in and cross over. And we got tens of thousands in custody in our prisons now. So it's just not about that. And,
and
the other part about the open borders and the North American Union, you know, that's part of the movement of the left. But the main thing is to protect our people and the future of our freedom. And we know that there's 195 countries on Earth, and there's only one, that is still capable and strong enough to defend freedom, and that's the United States of America. So we have to put our government and our people back together, put them back to work, make new laws, and make amendments to our Constitution.
We don't need new laws. Let me tell you what we need. We need the commitment to enforce the laws that are on the books. My life's work was enforcing those immigration laws. I did it for 30 years. And those laws are perfectly fine. The one law that I did think needed changing, I worked with Senator D'Amato back in the early 80s to change that law without the knowledge of my agency. It created quite a firestorm. And that law was reentry after deportation for criminal aliens. Prior to the change in the law, an alien who was deported from the United States faced no more than 2 years in jail. One of the problems you have in people violating laws, and this is something that everyone out there needs to know, and it's interesting because my original passion was science. I was originally going to be an engineer. My oldest boy, in fact, is a mechanical engineer. The laws of nature are immutable. You don't need a radar gun to make sure that light travels at 186,320 miles per second in a vacuum. It's going to do it whether or not we observe it.
Right.
But if man creates laws, if you don't enforce the laws, then they don't matter. So what has happened is we have never enforced the law. And the other part of the problem is getting prosecutors to prosecute violations of law. So now by going to D'Amato, I said this. A two-year jail sentence means that most likely aliens who get deported and come back will never be prosecuted for unlawful reentry. Because if you go to the U.S. attorney, a place, especially in a place like New York, where they are overflowing with criminal cases. If you walk into the U.S. attorney's office in Manhattan with a kilo of cocaine and say, I want to prosecute this guy, they're going to tell you, go look at some state prosecutor, because they just don't have the resources to be bothered with only a kilo. In some parts of the country, if you walk in with a kilo, it'll make headlines for the next 2 weeks. New York City, no, you got to really impress us here. So if you come in with an illegal alien who's been deported, came back, they're going to say, okay, and what else did he do? Well, he was deported. And does he have criminal history? Does he have this? Well, no, he doesn't. Mr. Cutler, just arrange for his removal from the country. And, of course, now the administration won't even do that. But so when I saw that was happening and I recognized that 2 years really isn't much of a penalty, I had proposed to Al D'Amato, who was then our senior senator, that reentry for a criminal alien should carry a maximum of 20 years in jail. Now, the result of that, and we did get the law passed, and I paraded over 30 of my colleagues through his office over a six-month period. Now, two things happened because of it. Number one, they are certainly willing to prosecute those cases. So now we have a real deterrent in place. In fact, I made the first arrest in New York for that violation of law, and the guy got 5 years to serve. And boy, was he in shock. He thought he was simply going home. The other thing is that immigration prosecutions now account for almost half of all federal prosecutions in the federal system, because there are now squads of agents every morning who get up and look for criminal aliens who've been deported and came back illegally, because now we know the U.S. attorneys will prosecute those cases. So the laws are fine. The problem is we only have about 7,000 ICE agents, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, of which over half are doing customs work, which has no relevance to immigration. Probably 90% of the people at headquarters at ICE came not from immigration but legacy customs, so they're not inclined to pursue immigration prosecutions. Same thing is true over at CBP, Customs and Border Protection. So the issue isn't whether the laws are good. The laws are great. They're perfect, almost. The problem is we don't enforce the laws because there's no resources or commitment. New York City has between 35,000 and 40,000 police officers. It always fluctuates. That's just for the city of New York. TSA, from what I've read, has about 60,000 employees. You have about 3,000 ICE agents for the whole country dedicated to enforcing the immigration laws. That's why we have the problem that we now have.
Do you feel that it's time to build a wall, or you're in favor of an open border and just make enforcement of the new laws, or the laws that are in place?
No, it's all part of the same thing. You know, people have asked, it was funny, I was on Lou Dobbs. I probably did about 80 appearances on Lou Dobbs tonight when he was over at CNN. Altogether, I probably did about 300 TV appearances. And I'm often asked about the fence. And, you know, I compare the fence on the border to the wing on an airplane. Without the wing, the airplane won't fly, but the wing by itself goes nowhere. A secure border needs to be a component of an immigration strategy, of an immigration enforcement program. So do we need a fence? Sure we do. We need to do whatever we have to do to impede the flow of illegal aliens into our country. But
I actually call for a wall to be built with all the securities and everything else than a fence. The fence doesn't work.
Well, we can get into that, but I'm just trying to explain to you the whole point. It's the idea that right now the way things stand, if you can get into the United States and away from the border, your home free.
Absolutely.
Because you have an administration that says that unless you have been convicted, not even arrested, but convicted for committing a string of felonies, we want to give you employment authorization. Now, I want you to stop and think how staggeringly incredible that statement is. Don't break into my house, but if you make your way from the first floor to the second floor, I now have to adopt you. I now have to give you a bed to sleep in, 3 square meals, and take care of your health care needs.
You're absolutely right. Well put.
So,
I mean,
understand the point. And by the way, we probably have between 5 and 10 million illegal aliens in our country who did not run our borders but came through ports of entry. These are so-called visa violators.
Yeah, those
are
visas.
If you fly at all, Bert, you know that you have to take your shoes off when we get on airplanes. And the reason for that is this knucklehead by the name of Richard Reed, who tried to blow up an airplane by putting bombs in his shoes. We also had, I call him Captain Underpants, Amu Talib, the guy that tried to bring an airplane down over Detroit a couple years ago on Christmas Day by putting explosives in his drawers. I'm still waiting for the TSA wedgie when I fly. But, you know, the point of the matter is that we take our shoes off because of Richard Reed. Okay, the government has figured it out. You can put explosives in the shoes. Richard Reed, as a British subject, did not need a visa in order to enter that airplane, would not have needed a visa in order to enter the United States under the visa waiver program. Back then, when he attempted to blow up that airplane, which was just weeks after 9/11, there were, if my memory serves me correctly, 26 countries on the list of visa waiver countries. Here we are today, more than a decade later, and the number of visa waiver countries is now 36. So while we have to take our shoes off, we are allowing ever greater numbers of aliens to enter our country without first applying for and receiving a visa. There was
That's a program, correct,
known as Transit Without Visa, where aliens who were destined to countries other than the United States could simply land at an airport or come into the country with a ticket in hand, and we'd say, okay, go ahead and continue on to your next destination. They did not end Transit Without Visa until August of 2002, almost a year after 9/11. Transit Without Visa should have ended the morning after 9/11.
That's right, 9/12.
So, I mean, if you look at what we have done and what we have not done since not only 9/11, but look at the first two terrorist attacks in 1993. In 1993, January 93, a guy by the name of Kansi, Amir Kansi, citizen of Pakistan, lied on an application for political asylum. Now, I'm very sensitive about the issue of political asylum. I'm Jewish. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. I think that we should try to help people who are in a desperate situation. But that doesn't mean blanketly approve anything that someone shoves under your nose. So we allowed Kansi to get political asylum, even though he lied through his teeth. And he repaid us by standing outside CIA headquarters with an AK-47 in January 1993. He opened fire on the vehicles being driven into the compound with an AK-47. He killed 2 CIA officers and wounded 3 others. He fled the country, which is what transnational criminals and international terrorists could easily do. But this time we sent people out there. We brought him back, put him on trial. He was found guilty and executed. But the people he killed remained dead. The people he injured remained injured. And a month later, we had the first attack at the World Trade Center. February 26, 1993, 6 people dead, over a half billion in damages, and hundreds if not thousands of people injured, and the tower almost came down sideways, a tower that stood a quarter of a mile tall. Had that come down, the seawall that keeps the Hudson River out of lower Manhattan would undoubtedly have ruptured. We would have lost the trains between Manhattan and New Jersey, the trains between Brooklyn and Queens, and we probably would have had hundreds of thousands of dead bodies. In response to that, the Clinton administration did absolutely nothing. And that's what set the stage for the attacks of 2001. You see, we continue to fail to learn the lessons. I testified before 15 congressional hearings since 9/11. I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. And where immigration is concerned, in some ways, my judgment, we are more vulnerable today, Bert, than we were on September 10th, 2001.
I believe that, yes. You know, the other part about securing our borders is also, if you like to speak about it, is the drug cartel. It's about $120 billion a year business. They have over 100,000 legal gang members in 33 states. and they're established in 270 cities.
Yes, so, and meanwhile, Napolitano says the borders are secure. The level of violence to be associated with the drug trade is staggering. In 1988, think about that, a quarter of a century ago, when I was the first INS agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division at DEA, I took it upon myself to do a study as to who we were arresting in New York for drug trafficking. In 1988, in New York City, DEA's arrestees, the defendants we arrested, about 60%, 60%, were foreign-born, 30% nationally.
Wow.
So when you look at that, when you look at, and by the way, when you spoke about the tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil abuts with Paraguay and Argentina, couldn't agree with you more, but also understand that you have Quds troops right now, Iranian shock troops in Venezuela in growing numbers, that there is a weekly flight between Tehran and Venezuela right now, that there's an AK-47 factory in Venezuela right now, that Venezuela is working on missiles that could reach the southern half of the United States.
We have completely dropped the ball on that to let any Middle
well,
East
of the Monroe
influence.
Doctrine. Look, think of the Monroe Doctrine. Think of the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1961, the missiles of October. Understand that our government has abrogated its responsibility to its own citizens. And look at the lie that we keep hearing, Bert. And we see it on Sunday, these alleged journalists. I just love it when they sit there and pontificate, and I'd love to know what the brain trust that gets in front of the cameras uses for source information. If the politicians want to win the alleged Latino vote, then they've got to provide illegal aliens with pathways to U.S. citizenship. They have to implement the DREAM Act to allow illegal aliens to be given opportunities to join the military. Why would you want somebody learning military tactics and how to use heavy weapons when you can't verify who they are? Let's go back to that term, undocumented.
Think of
the Fort Hood massacre. I spent a number of years in the late 70s working with the New York City Police Department, ATF, and what was then the Office of Naval Intelligence. Now it's the Naval Investigative Service, NIS. We had a bunch of people, mostly from the Caribbean, who had been admitted into the United States as agricultural workers. They were supposed to work in the citrus groves of Florida and the apple orchards of upstate New York. They never showed up, but they got involved with a different cash crop, marijuana, and they were very violent. We were following a trail of dead bodies, myself, the cops, and so forth. And one of the things that some of these thugs did was to go to recruiters who were short on their quotas for the month, get false ID in some cases with the assistance of desperate recruiters, and we're there again with that situation, by the way, in terms of recruiters being desperate to make their quota. They were joining the Marine Corps in particular, and what were they doing? They were learning how to use heavy weapons. In some cases, they stole the weapons, and then they went AWOL, and they were using the weapons and tactics that we taught them to stage commando-style bank robberies throughout the New York City area, and they killed quite a few people.
Wow. Yeah.
And then you have the situation where we had Palestinians back in the early 80s who were buying up little bodegas, which is what we call grocery stores in New York, and we didn't realize what they were doing initially. They were doing coupon fraud to the tune of over $100 million a year to fund Yasser Arafat and terrorism. And then when they realized that people were catching on to them, and I worked with ATF and with fire marshals, New York City fire marshals are interesting guys. They are firefighters who become marshals, which gives them full police authority, and they investigate arson. So we were working with them and with ATF, because ATF has an arson unit also, because what we found was happening was these thugs, these pieces of work, were setting fire to these stores so they could get the insurance money, and then they would split. People were dying or being terribly injured in the fires that they were setting back in the early 80s. In my judgment, those fires were acts of terrorism.
Yes, I agree with you.
So, I mean, this is just how this entire deal plays out daily. This is exactly what is happening throughout the United States. When you pick up a newspaper, they'll say something like, Chicago man arrested for whatever, and then as you go through it, you realize, wait a minute, this guy wasn't the Chicago man. This guy came here from another country and committed a terrible crime. They'll talk about a terrorist, call him homegrown. Shahzad, Faisal Shahzad, the guy that was going to blow up the car in Times Square, homegrown terrorist. He came here when he was 19 years old. How can you come here at age 19 and be properly described as homegrown? What is remarkable is that the journalists spew this nonsense. Most people don't think enough to go beyond the headline. And here is my contention, Bert. If you're going to talk about the Latino vote, first of all, I think that that is the worst kind of profiling imaginable. I get furious. I happen to be Jewish. I don't want to hear about the Jewish vote. You mean all Jews vote alike? We all think alike? All Latinos think alike? All Protestants and all Catholics and all blacks think alike? What kind of nonsense is that when you want to talk about profiling? To me, it's a how dare you moment. Am I right or wrong on that one?
Oh, you're absolutely right on that.
Let me just continue my thought, and then I want to hear what you have to say. But now think about this thought. So they talk about this mythical Latino vote. So all Latinos are the same, and if you want to appeal to them, then you have to show them that you're willing to allow our laws that are designed to protect them and all other Americans. We're willing to ignore those laws and leave our borders wide open. Well, I got to tell you, I do speaking engagements around the country, and if any of you folks out there know of such an event, you can certainly reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. You can contact Californians Population Stabilization at capsweb.org. You can reach me through talkborder.com. But, you know, when I do these speaking events, I can't tell you how many Americans of Latino ethnicity will come up to me and say to me, Mr. Cutler, you're right. I don't want to see illegal aliens coming into my neighborhood, because with them come the gang members, and the gang members recruit our children. Why on earth would I want to have people come into my community who are involved with drugs or involved with crime or involved with prostitution, involved with crimes of violence, and then have them try to recruit my teenage child into that gang? Why would I want America to let more workers come in who will compete with me for my job and drive down wages if I even still have a job? But you know what's remarkable? Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. If you want the Latino vote, then you have to give illegal aliens a pathway to citizenship. It's the same kind of lie with the same kind of toxic result.
Yes.
Am I crazy?
No, you're not. What I would say about illegal aliens is I would like to tell our Hispanic Americans that we love them, we're proud of them, we know they're Americans, and when I speak of illegal aliens, I'm speaking of anyone who crosses our border from any other country, and that's also, I don't know if you've heard about it, the Glue Lamb movement.
Go ahead. I haven't, but let's hear about it. That's interesting. Go ahead.
Well, it's 130 schools in 26 states that we have now. It's a Glue Lamb movement. Charter schools that focus on science and math, but the catch behind it, it's owned and operated and taught by all Turkish Muslim
teachers. Oh, I saw that. That was they did a story on that on 60 Minutes.
Yeah, they might have.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's and Turkey is also a huge powerhouse of sneaking in illegals over here too through Canada.
Well, but this is the entire point that people don't get. You know, it's funny. If you remember when Jonathan Hunt was one of the candidates for the presidency, during the debate he said, well, if I win the presidency, I will talk to the governors of the four border states. And I thought I was going to fall out of my chair.
Yeah.
In my judgment, we have 50 border states, and I'll tell you why. Any state that borders either Canada or Mexico is a border state. Any state that has access to an international seaport or a waterway is a border state. Any state that has an international airport is a border state. So how on earth can someone who truly wanted to be the president of the United States make that statement? Now think of George W. Bush when he said, when he was running against John Kerry, I was the governor of a border state. Well, every governor is the governor of a border state. And when illegals run the border, and I've been down to the border numerous times, and I went to Border Patrol Academy, I can assure you that you will not find too many tents set up along the border. The folks who come here don't come like Neil Armstrong went to the moon. They are not coming to set foot on our side of the border, grab a couple of rocks, plant a flag, and leave. They're headed for the rest of the country.
That's right.
Again, am I getting any of this wrong, Bert? You let me know when you think I'm wrong. I'm willing to listen.
No, I agree with you. I believe that it's a serious problem. We have to take care of it. We have to address it, or the consequences are going to be devastating. But we need to build a wall, secure our borders, and enforce the laws that instead of them feeling that the reward is worth the risk, we got to reverse that. That the reward is not worth the risk. And
that there is no reward. That's the bottom line, that there is no reward. We have
the reward to them is actually, you know, getting a paycheck and being able to send it home. That's the second largest income for Mexico behind Premix is the remittance that the illegals send home. So that is basically their reward.
It's over 20,
but there's no punishment for them.
Over $20 billion a year. Now, understand what's happened. If you go to the social contract, you can read this article that I wrote. It's a pretty extensive article. It's 20-odd pages long about the profiteers of illegal immigration. I called my article Immigration, the Modern Day Gold Rush. Look at Felipe Calderon and before him Vicente Fox. They want their people to come here. The leadership of the Indian government, India, wants their people to come here. Ireland keeps on petitioning our government to allow more of their people to come here. Why are they exporting their people? Well, in the case of Mexico, let's look at it real carefully. It's estimated that at least 10% of all Mexicans now live inside the United States. And if you don't believe it, realize that whenever there's a presidential election in Mexico, the candidates come to the United States to campaign.
Yeah.
Now, why? No, it's true. Now, why
yeah,
do they
I agree
do
with
that?
You.
Now, they do it for a couple of reasons. Number one, if there was to be a revolution in Mexico, who would be the most likely people to storm the gates and demand real change in Mexico? It would be the young, able-bodied men. Who comes to the United States to do the hard manual labor jobs?
The young, able men.
That's right, the ones that would otherwise be rioting. Okay. So
right.
Number one, they export the potential for insurrection. They export the potential for poverty. They export the expenses that would normally be borne by their health care system. Okay. So they do that. Now, in exchange for that, they get greenbacks. They get dollars. So now, look at this deal. They win, and then they win again. Now, here's what I'd love to know. If, let's say, for argument's sake, you allowed one of your neighbor's kids to stay with you. Let's say the parents said, you know, we have an emergency. We have a sick aunt in England. We have our 15-year-old boy. He'd like to stay with you for 2 weeks while we tend to our aunt in England. And that kid is playing basketball or whatever. He trips and he breaks his ankle. Would you be expected to pay the medical bill, or do you think the parents of that boy would be expected to pay the medical bill?
I believe the parents of the boy should be.
Absolutely. So what I'd love to know is why the United States doesn't go to the Mexican government and with their petroleum resources say to them, you know, you're not cash poor. In fact, Carlos Slim is the wealthiest man on the planet. He lives in Mexico.
That's correct.
So my question is this. Why isn't our State Department saying to Mexico, tell you what, you're sending $20 to $25 billion in remittances from the United States back to your country to fatten your economy. And that's just the visible money. There's lots of money that goes covertly that we can't even track. So when your citizens go to a hospital, you're picking up the tab.
That's correct. And actually, in 2006, the remittance sent to their country was $45 billion. And it actually costs us per year $340 billion a year, which is about $2 trillion over a six-year period.
Well, what it also costs that you're leaving out is the multiplier effect. Think of what this administration has done. And I don't know about the $45 billion. I do know that the statistics that I've seen, where I've tracked it, it ran to the mid-20s, but you may well be right, because it's really hard to pin banks down and so forth. But here's the problem that we have. In economics, there's something known as a multiplier effect. And what it is that if I earn a paycheck, and let's say you're a guy who sells cars, I make enough money, I go to you and I say, Bert, I'd like that car, so you sell me a car and you get a paycheck in part based on your commission for that expensive car that I bought. Then you go out and buy a new house, so some construction workers who built the house get paid for their labor to build the house that you just bought. So that's called the multiplier effect. That was supposedly the theory behind the economic stimulus package. If you pump money into the economy, that everybody will make out, because as people become better consumers and they buy more, it'll spur the economy to grow more. What we've done now is to bring in foreign workers whose goal is to send as much money as possible out of the economy. And I don't blame the foreign workers. Look, if I could go to Canada and earn the equivalent difference of, let's say, $500,000 a year so that I could send money back to my wife and kids, let me tell you, I'd be on the first bus to Montreal.
I agree with you.
But this is, and so I'm not angry with the illegal aliens. I'm angry with our own government. And so the money leaves our economy. We lose not only the money that leaves the economy, but the multiplier effect. It also drives down wages and causes Americans to wind up on food stamps or unemployment or whatever, which again costs us more money. And meanwhile, well, you know, I compare this to living in the time of an extreme drought and building a big swimming pool, and water is at a premium because it's a drought. You fill the pool, but foolishly you forget to close the drain, so in the morning you put on your swimming trunk thinking, I'm going to dive into my pool, and you find you have a bone-dry pool because, dummy that we are, we forgot to close the drain. That's exactly what we're doing with the American economy.
Yes. Absolutely.
Again, tell me where my reasoning is faulty.
No, I agree with you. It's even the stimulus package of $787 billion that basically was given out to supporters and friends of Barack Obama.
Yep.
It didn't really go into the part of the nation that was really struggling, and that was construction after the housing meltdown and banks and everything that goes into Home Depots and Lowe's, all those
yep.
manufacturers of goods. Even furniture and carpet stores, you know, everything we furnish our home with,
yep.
if we would have stimulated the construction trade,
it would have built everything else up.
It would have, because it's about 25-30% of this nation depends on some kind of construction.
Agreed.
And they didn't stimulate it at all. They just stimulated their buddies.
And I got another question for you. You're familiar with the construction industry. Can you compare the work of a day laborer with an honest-to-God tradesman?
No.
I mean, that's the point. What's happening is that Americans are winding up living in substandard houses when day laborers do the work instead of tradesmen. You know, I was very proud of my dad and his buddies, and I'm watching them build the successor to the World Trade Center. They're topping it off next week. And you look at those hardworking guys, and they're out there, whether it's 5 degrees outside or 105 degrees out there. You know, construction is more dangerous than law enforcement. I grew up around construction workers, and if there was ever anybody who embodies the can-do spirit that we've always thought was synonymous with America, it's the construction tradesmen. Whether it's the bricklayers, whether it's the carpenters, whether it's the plumbers or the electricians or the roofers or the tinsmiths, these are the guys that show what can-do is all about. Am I wrong on that?
You're absolutely right. We're the backbone of this country. And you know, when we go outside and we see a dozer pushing dirt, we know we're going to work. You know, that's a good sign for America.
Doesn't it have a wonderful smell? You know, when I walk by a construction site, my dad died when I was 19. He was 57 when he died of lung cancer, in part because he worked in the shipyards during the Second World War and felt he had to contribute to the war effort. When I smell that smell of freshly turned soil, and when you hear the cacophony of the hammers and the saws and all the other equipment, to me, that's an orchestra. I still wind up instinctively looking for my pop, even though he's gone 45 years.
It's a wonderful sound. It's a wonderful sight. You know, a country
yep.
that is consistently under construction is a country that will stay strong.
Yep.
And we could see that if we don't, it's tough now to stimulate the construction part. We're out of money. We can't borrow it. Can't print it. But sooner or later, if we want a quicker way out of this, we got to stimulate construction and get the foreclosures gone and get this upward motion of our economy back up. And we're not going to do it without construction is my whole point. That's our starting, our base point right there.
Construction.
And there's plenty of jobs
to do in
this country.
Manufacturing. And, you know, I confronted Newt Gingrich. I spoke at the Tea Party convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. He spoke, and then I got on stage right after. I joked with people afterwards and said that he was my warm-up act. But I bumped into Newt in the bar afterwards, and I said, you know, Mr. Speaker, my name is Mike Cutler. He knew who I was. I said, I'd love to have a couple of minutes with you. He said, okay. I said, with all the talk about creating jobs, why don't you talk about liberating jobs? I said that if you want to create jobs, you have to get money. You have to build a facility. It's time-consuming. If you want to put people to work tomorrow morning, enforce the immigration laws. As the illegals are going out the back door, the lawful workforce of every race, religion, and ethnicity is coming in through the front door immediately. There's no time, there's no lag time. And I said, we're not talking about 100,000 jobs. We're talking about maybe 10 million jobs. And I got to tell you.
How many illegals do you feel with kids are in this country at this time?
Oh, I'm willing to bet that we're somewhere between 30 and 40 million.
Well, I beg the difference. I believe we're between 50 and 70 million, And I base that number on what the government has admitted and what the Border Patrol has admitted, that for every one illegal that we catch, 10 make it through. So if we catch a million a year, which we do on our southern border, that would make it 10 million make it through.
Well, here's
so,
the deal, though.
I mean,
this is one of the arguments I have with the Border Patrol, by the way, also. Because, and, you know, we were always at war with the Border Patrol as agents because they wanted the money over us, so we were always in conflict with them. They can arrest the same person six times and take credit
for
six arrests.
Well, let me ask you this, Michael.
And here's what I said when I was on Neil Cavuto. He said to me, you know, arrests are down, so it means there's fewer illegals here. I said, first of all, trying to figure out how many illegal aliens are present in the country based on Border Patrol arrests is a lot like trying to take attendance and telling people not present to raise their hand.
Well, the other part, that kind of tells us there's quite a few of them, is that we went through a school building boom, and it wasn't our baby boom. It was those from illegals, and you can see that has backed off. And let me ask you this. If we're talking a 30, 40 million return rate back to Mexico, do you feel that we should somehow stimulate their economy to go back to, or they're on their own?
Well, you know, people always make that point, and it's really hard to say. One of the problems that you're dealing with Mexico, and increasingly it's becoming an American problem, is corruption.
Absolutely.
Because if you look at the situation in Mexico right now, corruption is astronomical. And it's astronomical because of the drug trade. And look at what we're doing in America right now. Look at the Citizens United lawsuit. As a federal agent, I was not allowed to accept so much as a cup of coffee from somebody. In fact, you know, when if I went to someone's house, not because they were the target of an investigation, but maybe they lived across the street from somebody that I had an interest in. And, you know, you'd knock on the door and you'd say, hi, this is who I am. Here's my badge. We'd go in, we'd talk. And I'd say to the guy, look, I could use your help. You don't have a gun and a badge, and I'm not about to give you one. But if you notice a car in the driveway, if you could jot down the license plate and give me a call, or if you see something happening, whatever. And people would be very happy to cooperate with us. And if those folks would say to me, you know, Mr. Cutler, we're having dessert. Why don't you sit down and have a slice of apple pie and a cup of coffee? You know what I was expected to say? And I can tell you that's exactly what I said. I'll settle for a glass of ice water.
There you go.
Because you didn't want anyone to think, wow, he had a cup of coffee in my house, he's now my buddy. No,
that's right.
As an agent, you have to keep the public at arm's length so that you always maintain a professional relationship. When you have politicians that can go out there boasting about being the best fundraiser and all their supporters stand behind them like a bunch of flipping trained seals clapping away, could you imagine if I went to my boss in my office? And my boss, by the way, had been the head of internal affairs for the NYPD before he came to immigration, and for a while he was the head of our internal affairs. Imagine if I went to Walter and said, Walter, you should be proud of me because I'm the best fundraiser in the office. I would have been in front of a grand jury so quickly I would have had no idea as to how I had gotten there. But the politicians are taking with both hands. We see it on both sides of the aisle, and it's about pandering. And this comes back to this idea about who are they pandering to. And now here's again where the big lie comes in. The politicians are pandering to the illegal aliens. Well, when people say that, now again there's animosity between Americans and anybody with a Hispanic last name, which is unfair to Americans who happen to have Hispanic surnames. They're not pandering to illegal aliens. If anyone out there thinks that politicians are looking for the DREAM Act to pander to illegal aliens, you're drunk. You're high. They're pandering to the profiteers of illegal immigration. When people in politics during that dark era of slavery in America voted to sustain slavery, they weren't doing it for the slaves. They were doing it for the slave masters.
That's right.
Do you realize how crazy this is? Oh, they're pandering to the illegals. Oh, my God, are you that foolish? No, they are pandering to the exploiters. Because they're expecting to be paid for it. If this isn't corruption and bribery, then somebody, please, give me a new definition for bribery and corruption.
Well, another point that I'd like you to address on is that if we're going to send 30, 40 million back across the border, what do you feel about the drug cartel and their strength and their brutality? Should we do something about that before we expect that kind of number of people going back to their homeland?
Well, first of all, they're not all going to Mexico. Second of all, I'm not expecting us to deport 40 million people. We're not going to do that. We've got to be realistic. But as I had said on Lou Dobbs, I will tell you, number one, nobody breaks into the amusement park if they couldn't get to go on the ride. And number two, no one stays at the amusement park at the end of the day when they turn off the lights and shut down the rides. Everyone heads for the border, heads for the exits. If we made it clear that violating our laws and violating our borders will get you into a problem, they wouldn't come. If you said to illegal, if you made an announcement tomorrow morning, right, President of the United States gets elected, let's say Mitt Romney or whoever gets elected, and the new head of DHS, whoever that is, I had this argument with Mike Chertoff. We both spoke at Chapman Law School. We had an interesting 45-minute session in the back of a limo. I don't think Mike will be the same after that. But here is my point. Imagine if that new head of DHS comes in and says, listen, if you are an illegal alien and if you are caught for any reason at all, you're in a car that gets pulled over because the driver is drunk or he blows a red light and they hold on to you and you get fingerprinted and photographed, you will be permanently barred from ever getting a green card in the United States. You have 90 days to get your act together and leave, file for a proper visa from your home country, because if you are caught here, under no circumstances will we allow you to remain here or will we allow you to ultimately acquire a green card. Now you're really giving people cause for pause. The whole point to law enforcement isn't to get 100% compliance. There's no such thing. The whole point is to create enough of a deterrence that people have to question whether what they're doing makes sense. Let me give you an example. When I started driving, and I'm in my mid-60s right now, when I started driving, we had a huge problem in New York City with drunk drivers. Back then, it was a joke. I remember John Wayne being on The Tonight Show joking about being blind drunk and driving his car, and he turns to Johnny Carson and says, Johnny, I think God was my co-pilot that night, and the audience roared. Today, they'd boo him off the stage, and rightfully so. There's nothing funny about drunk driving. Look how many illegal aliens kill people by drunk driving. So the deal is this. What do they do in New York? They started a new policy, sobriety checkpoints. You get caught drunk, they will take your car, they will suspend your license, and you may well go to jail and wind up paying a ton of money in fines. Yeah. Whoa, do I want to run that risk? No. And I will tell you, we have had far fewer drunk drivers. When I used to be out driving as a young kid, I'd be out on a date, and we'd be on the Belt Parkway or going up the FDR Drive in Manhattan, and you'd see some guys swerving clear across the highway from left to right and back again. That happened at least a couple times a night on the weekends because everybody was out drinking and driving. I can't tell you the last time I saw somebody do that in New York. We changed everybody's attitude, we New York did, by having the cops enforce drunk driving laws. And you know what the result is? Death rates dropped tremendously. If you want something to stop happening, stop rewarding it. Stop ignoring it. Make it clear that we won't tolerate it. Here we are inducing people. You know, there's a statute, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324, aiding, abetting, inducing, encouraging, harboring, or shielding an alien to enter illegally or remain illegally thereafter. These are felonies. Is it not inducing to say to somebody, if you get here, I want to give you a pathway to citizenship? The President of the United States has said it. Chuck Schumer yeah. has said it. Nancy Pelosi has said it. John McCain has said it. Okay, so they're all talking about once you get here, we'll take care of you. You are inducing. You are encouraging. When you have a city that declares itself a sanctuary, not allowing immigration authorities to know that they have an illegal in custody, is that not harboring and shielding? And yet, what do they do to sanctuary cities? Nothing. Arizona passes its own law. I've been working with the law firm retained by Governor Brewer to defend them. In fact, I'm excited because the Supreme Court will be ruling in just a couple of weeks. They sue Arizona for daring to try to enforce the laws they won't enforce.
That's correct. Well, I'll tell you what I'm in favor. I mean, I sympathize with the illegals, and they need to work. They come here and work. They get paid. I sympathize with that part of it, and I don't condemn them for that. But what supersedes that is naturally my love for my country and my freedom. But we send so much work over to China, and we support a communist country
yep.
with our money. And our money is making them very wealthy and very powerful, and we're going to have to deal with them soon. I'm more in favor of our work that we can't handle, that's overabundance, is making that with Mexico, to teach them and educate them on exports and the workforce and taking that extra load from us, but it also keeps them at home. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that would make sense. And, you know, we do have a program where we can bring foreign workers into the United States, but, of course, there's so much corruption and fraud in that program, whether it's the H-1B visa program, the B-1 visas. You know, the idea, I don't know if you know this, but the Labor Department used to be in charge of enforcing and administering America's immigration laws right up to the Second World War. Because the biggest concern that America had was that if you dump lots of workers into the labor pool, you will drive down wages. What built America wasn't just having lots of people cross our borders. Usually that results in catastrophe. What made America successful, besides the fact that we had wide open spaces 100 years ago that we needed to populate, was that we had a middle class, and anybody who acquired an education or a skill could aspire to the middle class. So you had successive generations of Americans teaching their children that you're going to do better than me by getting a better education. Now, what's happened is we're turning it on its ear. For the first time in I don't know how many generations, the current generation has a reduced expectation of success. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer April 30th, 2009, before the Senate Immigration Subcommittee that Schumer chairs. And what did he say? He referred to Americans with skills or education as the privileged elite. I kid you not. I watched the hearing live. You can go to my website, michaelcutler.net. You can go to capsweb.org. You can see the articles I've written about this. I was sitting here watching it live, and you can still see a video. There are links up to that hearing. I thought I was going to fall out of my chair. Referring to Americans with skills or education as the privileged elite. And he said that we need to make American workers compete with foreign workers so that we eliminate inequality in wages between Americans with skills and Americans without skills. Now, I want you to think about that. What he was prescribing was communism, that even if you have an advanced degree, even if you're a tradesman, you shouldn't make more than the guy that dropped out of public school.
You're taking away the reward of your effort.
And what you're taking away is the engine that built America into the foremost power on this planet.
Absolutely.
So this is just how bad it's been. I mean, I guess you could see I've been at it for a long time. It's hard for me to believe that I've been focused on the immigration issue for over 40 years.
Wow. Well, let me ask you, will you watch my video that I sent you?
I will. I will take a look at it. And why don't you give out the website? Why don't you tell everybody where they can see your video? I will certainly look at your video.
It's AmericaWorking, one word, .org/. And there's 9 videos there. And it's a threat to our nation and our way out. So I have some construction jobs in there also. And, Michael, I'm going to send you one more video. I'll send it to the same location. It's
sure.
The Nation of Islam. And
sure.
If I ask you, if you enjoy them, would you please send them out? I really would appreciate it.
Sure. Absolutely, I will. I got to tell you, Bert, it was a delight. I wasn't planning to have any guests on today. I'm glad you called in. I saw your number here, and I said, well, let's spin the wheel of fortune here and see who pops up, because you just never know. But, ever since 9/11, I have been determined to get people to understand immigration for what it is. See, immigration isn't a single issue, but a singular issue, because it impacts every threat and challenge that we face. And this isn't about vilifying immigrants. My mother, may she rest in peace, was an immigrant. My dad's parents were immigrants. And you know, let me tell you, first and foremost, they were Americans. I love this country because if it wasn't for America, my mom would not have survived the Holocaust. I would never have been born. My kids wouldn't be here. I owe this country not only my life, but my children's lives. But to look at the nonsense that's now going on, and one of the things that I also do, there's a wonderful organization known as Alan L. Freed Associates. They do seminars in Washington for various government agencies, intelligence agencies, the military, and so forth. In fact, I'm going to be in Washington next week speaking at a seminar that they are conducting, a week-long seminar on the national security and terrorism. And I've been in front of Air Force generals. Now, one day, I thought I'd have a little bit of fun to get people thinking. Now, imagine sitting in a room with a bunch of Air Force generals and full-bird colonels, and I said, ladies and gentlemen, I have a question for you. I'd like to know why we still have a military. And boy, oh boy, I thought I was going to have to duck. And I said, before you reach for your sidearms, I'm not wearing body armor, and I'm not suicidal. And by the way, I'm a huge fan of the military. My dad's brother, may he rest in peace, was in the Army Air Corps in the Pacific Theater during the Second World War. I did a little single-engine flying. My heroes were never athletes. I've always thought that athletes get far too much money and far too much attention. It's almost silly. Other than my dad being my biggest hero, next in line to my dad were the astronauts and test pilots. I even got letters from some of the astronauts when I was a kid. And I met some of the astronauts along the way. So they're my heroes. But I said, here's why I raised the question. Is it not true that our military, all five branches of the U.S. military, have one common goal? To keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible. So they all agreed. I said, well, if that is your number one mission, then can you please explain to me how you can accomplish your number one mission when our borders only exist on maps and when we already have unknown millions, perhaps tens of millions, of foreign nationals living and working throughout our country from coast to coast, border to border, and there's no way of knowing their true identities, their true nationalities, who they are affiliated with, what's in their backgrounds, or what's in their hearts or in their intentions. How can you possibly carry out your mission? If, God forbid, there was to be another terrorist attack, what role would our nuclear submarines play to help us? What role would our stealth bombers play to help us? What role would our Abrams tanks play to help us? How can you prevent that attack when the bad guys are likely already here? That's I had a right. general come up to me after that and say to me, Mr. Cutler, I want to thank you for reminding me how pissed off I am at my own government. Now, you tell me if that was an unreasonable question.
No, I completely agree. The damage is already done. They're here. They're within.
And do you know that Robert Mueller, and I quoted him when I testified before the House Immigration Subcommittee and the House Judiciary Committee, Robert Mueller, head of the FBI, on a number of occasions, warned of the danger of sleeper agents. And what's really remarkable is there's a program known as VIPER, where TSA goes around and checks trucks being driven across the country. And what Chertoff said, I think it was in 08 or 07, he talked about VIPER and justified it, saying that in law enforcement it's important to add randomness to the equation, that you never know when the flying fickle finger of fate is going to land on your square, and you never know what you're going to trip over. And I can tell you as an agent, that's true. I've made thousands of arrests in my career. Thousands. And there were times where, I mean, most of the time you would just get some ordinary schmo. But we had a case where I found a guy in a factory who, it turned out, had been previously deported from the United States after he did time for manslaughter, came back, was prosecuted, and was sentenced to jail. He escaped from a federal penitentiary and got himself a job at this factory that we hit. I've had other occasions where I've arrested people and, searching the house, realized that they were involved with either terrorism, involved with drug trafficking, involved with all sorts of things. You know, half the FBI's 10 most wanted get arrested when cops stop people for motor vehicle stops. You never know who you're getting. You've dropped a hook into a very deep ocean. You know you got a fish. You don't know which fish you have. So understand how important randomness is. Well, here's Mike Chertoff on the one hand talking about randomness, but on the other hand, the Bush administration failed to enforce the immigration laws. Of course, compared to where Obama is, it's not even a contest. But it's remarkable that you have people, and I think Chertoff is a bright guy, who understands the importance of randomness, who understands law enforcement strategy, but suddenly when we talk about immigration, we go off the rails. Immigration has two simple primary goals, very simple: protect American lives, protect American jobs. And what's incredible, what's unfathomable, is how politicians can openly call for disregarding immigration laws. That means they are calling for disregarding the significance of saving American lives and saving American jobs. And you know what, folks? These nitwit politicians get elected. So who's really the nitwit? You know, the First Amendment, everyone rattles off freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion. It's all there. But there's two other components that I bet you most of your neighbors don't know. Maybe you don't know it. First Amendment also has two other factors built in: the right to seek redress of grievances, and boy, do we have a list. And secondly, the right to peaceably assemble. And you know why you have the right to peaceably assemble? Because in their wisdom, the founding fathers understood that the only way to have a true democracy is to have debate, discourse, argument, whatever. And back then, there was no internet, there was no telephone, there was no way of communicating other than person to person, peaceably assembling. And they understood that unless you could get together with your fellow Americans under a shade tree or in a church or a synagogue or a school or a barn or someone's living room and have that conversation, then you could not be successful at maintaining a democratic government. And today, look at the attacks on the internet. Look at the attacks on talk radio. Nancy Pelosi and Trent Lott, polar opposites politically, about 10 years ago, were railing about talk radio. Now, there's a lot of talk radio hosts that I have absolutely no desire to hear. But as an American, I have a tuning knob. So if I don't like what some guy has to say or some gal has to say, I change the channel. Freedom of choice. Increasingly, we are losing freedom of choice. We are being given groupthink, whether it's too much sugar and too much salt. Yes, we should eat healthy, but what's remarkable, you were talking about this, Bert, the cartels. The money that we spend on the cartels is money that's drained out of our economy. It is money that fuels the cartels and terrorist organizations. And what happens? You do not see a single commercial on television warning young people about the danger of snorting cocaine or shooting up heroin, but there will be plenty of commercials telling them to put less sugar in their coffee in the morning. What is wrong absolutely with that picture?
Absolutely correct. And it's a huge industry. You know, the drug cartel are very powerful, and I don't think we truly know the extent of it that we know right now.
No, we don't. And you know, what's so astonishing, we're told we have a war on drugs. I spent 14 years of my career up at DEA. I had a desk at DEA and the FBI and ATF. I had a privilege of working with some truly incredible people. One of my closest friends in law enforcement, Everett Hatcher, DEA agent, was killed doing an undercover narcotics investigation. I've known many people who were killed in the line of duty doing drug investigations, and the drugs continue to flow into our country. The banks make a ton of money off of it because they move the money. The remitters do. The banks do. Look at all the people making money off of narcotics, making money off of illegal immigration, making money off of crime. These remitters and banks are the silent partner to every criminal you could imagine. The damage to our society is inestimable. A child who is hooked on drugs is not a child who will be successful. If you go into the prisons, you will see that probably 70% or more of the inmates who are there for committing street crime are technically illiterate. So understand what we're doing. And I'm not saying that we have to feel bad for people and they have the right to commit crime, but this is a matter of practicality. If you're hungry and can't feed yourself, you're going to steal. If you don't equip our kids to be successful, bad things are going to happen. We hear all these stories about that illegal alien who wants his share of the American dream. And there are some unique cases, and I'm not without compassion. But you know something? We almost never hear about the American family who has that child who is brilliant and wants just the opportunity to get his or her foot into that door of that school. We have so many brilliant kids, members of America's minorities, who are living in squalor, living in filth, living in crime-ridden neighborhoods, who have the ability, who have the desire, but lack the funding to go to college. If they ever see the inside of a university, it will probably mean that they got a job as a janitor sweeping the floors. Before we worry about taking care of foreign kids, folks, charity begins at home. You know, we often see these horrible stories where a building catches fire or a boat capsizes, and you'll see the parent running out of that burning building, injured, carrying their own child with them. No one would ever say to them, "Look at that guy. What kind of a bad guy is he? Imagine he saved his own son and left someone else's kid in that building to die." No, it's common sense. It's human nature. You rescue your own first. Americans are supposed to look out for Americans first. We are the 911 to the world. We are. We do more for the rest of the world than any other country in history. But goodness, folks, goodness gracious, the time has come for Americans to say, you know something, we need to help our own citizens first. When we are on an airplane and they tell you if the oxygen mask comes down, put yours on first so that you can take care of that person sitting next to you who maybe can't take care of himself or herself. America needs the oxygen mask right now. It is not unreasonable to look to see how we can make America as strong as possible before we start to look to see what we could do to help other people around the world. Is that an unreasonable perspective, Bert? You tell me.
No, it's not. And the thing is, if we don't start helping ourselves and take back what belongs to us as our land and our country, we won't be able to help anybody else. And that will be the demise of our country. So I urge all Americans to educate themselves on what's truly going on. And don't take somebody's opinion or their own word for it. Do your homework and do your research and find out the truth and be a better educated voter when we go to the polls. Because what we have right now in government actually shows our mindset and our capabilities of what we vote for. And that's backfiring on us.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's the first obligation. You know, I mean, you can't possibly cast your ballot intelligently until and unless you come to understand the issue. You know, I was on with Lou one day, and he said to me, Mike, what do you think of the virtual fence? And, I mean, you could see this thing was a charade. And I said, Lou, the virtual fence will do what it was designed to do, stop virtually nobody. And it turned out that that was exactly what happened. They spent over $1 billion on this boondoggle, and it never worked. And now we're being told by Napolitano, the head of the Department of what I call the Department of Homeland Surrender, says, oh, we need 10 to 15 years to build a fence. We went to the moon in 9 years. 9 years. But to construct a barrier on our border will take 10 to 15 years?
That is completely asinine, because once we decide that we're going to build a wall – and build something that actually is going to last, you know, a couple hundred years, something that accents our whole countryside, that's not a sore thumb. We could have everybody would come down to work on this thing and be proud of it, and it would absolutely stimulate the construction trade, because all of us would come down and work on this wall.
But
you're talking
2,000
miles, Mike.
But realize how foolish this whole business is. And then, you know, again, the false arguments. Oh, my God, you want to build a wall? Well, like East Germany. Well, there's a little difference. East Germany built a wall to keep their people from fleeing. We want to build a wall to keep bad guys from coming in. You know, there's a fence around the White House, but I don't think it's a prison.
Right. That's beautiful.
I will talk to you off air. I have your number. I see the number that you're calling from. I will get a hold of you hopefully over the weekend. And I really want you to know that I do appreciate your having called in. And I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to wrap up my program. But really great having you on this evening. I had a good time with you. I'm looking forward to seeing the film that you did. And I want to thank you for something. And you know what I want to thank you for? Taking your citizenship seriously.
Well, thank you, Mike, for having me. And I thank you for all you do, and never give up, never surrender. And I'll tell you what, I'll send you another email with a new video, and I'll put down my personal cell number for you so you can call me. And
yeah,
I'd love to come
terrific.
Back on your show anytime you want me. I'll be there for you.
Well, I really appreciate it. And, you know, folks, I want you to understand this. But speaking to you, I'm going to bet you're not registered as a Democrat, and that's great. We're not supposed to agree, folks. It's as American as apple pie to have our areas of disagreement. God help us when the day comes that we as Americans can't disagree with each other politically but love each other as fellow Americans. Am I right or wrong on that one?
Absolutely. We're all going to have different views and not completely agree with each other, but one thing we have to agree on is that when we bleed, it's red, white, and blue. And
you
I want to thank you, Mike, for having me, and I want to tell our nation, God bless you, I love you, and until we meet again, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bert. Great having you on with me. Thanks for joining me today. You know, I'm glad that Bert joined me. I wasn't expecting to have a guest today. I thought I was going to do a little solo flying. I know that I got an article about how Denver, Colorado is now providing reduced tuition fees for illegal aliens. You know, folks, I really want you to stop and ask yourself, is our government truly representing you when we do these boneheaded things, when we allow politicians who don't stand up for American citizens first and foremost, and then we reelect them? Who do we blame? Politicians work for us, we the people. They are our employees. When we fail to set standards, when we fail to let them know what's expected of them, when we fail to make them accountable, then we have nobody else but ourselves to blame for whatever follows. This isn't about any American of any race, religion, ethnicity. It's about all Americans. And it's about honoring the hardworking Americans. I am tired of the politicians who look down their nose at blue-collar Americans or any other collar Americans and say, well, the illegals do the work Americans won't do. We need foreign workers because we're too stupid. We need foreign workers because we're too lazy. We do foreign workers because we don't have the guts. Well, we can start proving that we have the guts on Election Day and even before Election Day. Please, you know, I always like to end commentaries by reminding people that democracy is not a spectator sport. It's not just a nice slogan. It means that you, as a citizen of this country, have an absolute responsibility to get a hold of that person or persons who purport to represent you and your family and make them understand that they are either going to do what is appropriate and in the best interest of our country and the best interests of our citizens, or we're going to vote them out of office. Don't just tell them I disagree. Tell them I will work to see to it that anybody that runs against you will win against you. That is the way we fire people. If you've ever had a boss threaten to fire you, if you've ever been fired, if you know someone who's been fired, people sometimes get fired for not doing their job. The way we get rid of politicians is by voting them out of office. If they're not doing the job, if they're not representing you or your family or our country or your community, then they need to go, and they need to be made to understand that what they're doing is not acceptable. Democracy most certainly is not a spectator sport. You know, folks, to wrap things up, there's a couple of new articles, a couple of videos up on my website. I very much want you to go to talkborder.com. My interview with Thomas Machete, the brother of Robert Machete, slain police officer. I testified at that murder trial. Awful story. But that's the reality, and it's the reality that's seldom, if ever, really talked about in the media. We hear all about illegal aliens and how tough they have it, but incredibly, we almost never hear about the impact that this has on American citizens. There are a handful of politicians who are worthy of support. Steve King is certainly one of them. Not long ago, he did a news conference on the steps of the Capitol where he talked about the 7,000 people killed every year in our country because we won't enforce our immigration laws. Steve is a man of integrity. He's getting it right. So I ask you, go to my website, michaelcutler.net. You can reach me there. You can reach me through Californians Population Stabilization at capsweb.org, or certainly I would love for you to go to talkborder.com, TALKBORDER. You have three great websites to go to over the weekend. If you like what you see, what I ask you to do is please pass it along to your friends and neighbors. Ask them to do the same. I'm trying desperately to create a bucket brigade of truth. We, the people, have got to take responsibility for our country and for the future of not only our country, but ourselves and our family. So that's where it begins, folks. Please get involved. Look forward to speaking with you again next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. So long.